Hello, hello, and a very warm welcome to the Steps to Investing podcast, bringing you the latest market news, company headlines, educational explainers, and expert interviews to help you invest for a better return. I'm Marcus De Silva. And a very warm welcome to 2023 and a fresh season of the Steps to Investing podcast. This is season six. Today, we're going to look at three major themes that have been driving markets year to date. We're going to have a little look at how much is needed for different standards of living in retirement. We're going to have a look at the business environment for some household names, companies including Sainsbury's, M&S, Tesla, and Ocado. And then we're going to dive into our big interview with the managing director from Chelsea Financial Services. His name is Darius McDermott. He's been on the pod a few times. And he's going to gaze into his crystal ball and look forward at 2023 and tell us what he thinks might happen in stock markets this year. And he's also got, of course, some investment ideas for us as well, depending on your level of risk. Of course, please share the pod if you're enjoying it and subscribe. All right, let's start with the markets then and what we've been chatting to Hargreaves about in terms of what's been going on in stock markets. And I think what I'm going to do with these now is sort of round these into three major themes. I mean, lots always goes on in stock markets as well, but it's quite good to sort of bunch up some of the major things that have been driving the performance of certain stock markets around the world. So I'm going to start with energy, which has been one of the big themes really of stock markets in 2022. Russia invaded Ukraine and then weaponized its energy exports, of which are, you know, pretty substantial, which then sparked a global energy crisis last year. So, which then fed into all sorts of things, including inflation as well. So it's been a major theme last year. It's continuing in 2023. Obviously, the war is still continuing in Ukraine. So what's happened? Well, more recently, we saw the West introduce some price caps. So they said any ships that are basically transporting Russia's oil from Russia will not be insured unless the oil is below $60 a barrel. So that's how they've, the mechanisms for that price cap. And in recent weeks, in response, as you would have expected, Russia has banned exports to nations that are applying this particular price cap. So what this means is that given that the Chinese economy is coming back online as it lifts COVID restrictions earlier this year, I'll get onto that in just a sec, it means that you've got this situation where the demand for oil is increasing. I mean, China has got an enormous appetite for energy at the same time as supply is becoming more difficult again, you know, a bit more restricted. So it has in recent weeks, it's led to some rises in the price of oil, but there's this big yo-yoing going on because they're on the other side of the coin, what investors are fretting about are the emerging, the forecast recessions, the economic slowdowns that are happening across the globe, which reduces the demand for oil because, you know, as economies slow down, their energy needs become, you know, less. So that's why the demand for oil reduces there. So you've got these two sides of this, of, you know, one side pushing prices up, the other pushing it down. And the interesting thing is how these are competing and which is really going to win, really. So we saw some rises in the oil price, but then they fell back down and then they rose again and then they fell back down. So we're just seeing a lot of volatility in in energy prices. And I think over the course of the year, that'll be a really interesting thing to keep an eye on, considering its impact on broader inflation, because energy feeds into the price of lots of things. So that's been one of the big themes over the past sort of few weeks, month, because it's been a little while since we've been on the podcast. The second theme is in markets has been China's lifting of COVID restrictions. So there's some optimism in markets about China's U-turn on its harsh COVID policies. and we're seeing them sort of roll out, lots of them sort of coming online basically at the beginning of this year. So more recently, we saw that foreigners entering the country now only require a negative COVID test, and also Hong Kong and Macau, two sort of special regions within China, have begun issuing visas again as well. So it's business is opening up, the economy is opening up. But of course, as I'm sure many of you are aware, infection rates are worryingly high there, and they're likely to get worse, unfortunately, before they get better. The country is about to celebrate the Lunar New Year, so lots of mixing when already the virus is pretty rampant. So, of course, that's having a big effect on its economy. Data shows that its manufacturing, for example, is being pretty severely affected. But there's also some positive signs too. We saw some surveys that show that business sentiment managers are basically hopeful of the upcoming months as the economy starts to lift. I think one potential future concern as it starts to come back online is the impact of suddenly unleashing all this demand. All these consumers go out there and you know, it's been even longer in China. Of course, what did we all do in other countries that have been released from COVID restrictions much earlier is we go out there and spend. And that, of course, stoked a lot of inflation. So at the moment, inflation is pretty reasonable in China at around 2% levels. What will happen is it starts to properly emerge out of COVID. Well, you know, we could see some pretty rampant inflation there too. So again, that's another interesting one to watch, I think. Third thing in markets I wanted to talk about is the UK. So obviously we've still got pretty rampant inflation. We're waiting for December's numbers, but November's reading was 10.7% rise in broad prices from where they were a year ago. There are signs that it may be peaking, but there are still pretty annoying levels of inflation in things that we really need to buy, like food. So we saw groceries jumping 13.3% in December. Of course, it's driving a cost of living crisis, as many of us worry about bills. The savings from COVID do seem to have stretched over a little bit, which is helping. But this year will probably be one where we see a bite a lot more, and a lot more of a squeeze, particularly as higher interest rates kick into higher bills like mortgages, which is going to hamper our ability to spend in the economy. As a result, we've also seen pay disputes erupt across all sorts of public sectors. This is because, you know, when you look at average pay growth for state employees, up to October it was 2.7%, whereas the private sector got 6.7%. So it's quite understandable that employees in the public sector want to see their real wages going up, especially after more than a decade of pretty non-existent wage growth out of the back of the global financial crisis and lots of austerity. For the moment, the government and the union seem to be digging their heels in, although there is some thawing of relations as they start to talk a bit more, but it's going to crimp economic activity here, particularly in areas that are quite exposed, like hospitality. Businesses are of course concerned about the slowdown and consumers' ability to spend, but also their energy bills as well. On the 9th of Jan, we heard from the government that said it would help, but not with a price cap. It's going to give a discount on prices. So it means that whilst this does help, firms are still exposed to volatility, the big swings in prices in the energy markets. The one good thing, the ray of hope, is that at least gas prices, which tend to feed into a lot of electricity prices, have massively reduced from where they were last year, in part helped by just sheer luck that we've had a pretty mild winter across Europe. All told, for 2023 so far, we can see the US's S&P 500 is up 3.8% to 3,969 points. The UK's FTSE 100 is up 3.04% to 7,784 points. Europe's Stoxx 600 is up 4.96% to 451 points. And China's Shanghai Composite is up 1.5%. To 3,163 points. Okay, let's get on to our little explainer. And I wanted to touch on pensions. It's one of those really important things. It's like it's the, arguably, but the most important financial goal we will have if we ever want to stop working and enjoy those golden years. And it's one of those things, you know, we sort of save into this pot, but we don't really know what the goal is. You know, how big do you want that pot to be? And what kind of lifestyle do you want? It's not something that we tend to map out very clearly. And there is something that can help. There's a trade association that focuses on pensions, and it's called the Pensions and Lifetime Savings Association, the PLSA. They've got a website. Feel free to go and have a look at it. It's quite interesting because what they do is have a look and define three different standards of living that you might want in retirement, be it for a single person or for a couple, and then tell you how much you need to save, which is very useful because then it does actually go, well, yes, if you want this, and then they put this sort of, the three standards that they have are minimum, moderate, and comfortable. So if you want this comfortable standard of living, you're going to need this amount. And this is what it'll afford you. So I think it's quite useful. It sort of frames what that big retirement saving goal actually looks like. And therefore, you know, gives you an idea of, oh, how am I going to get there? And if I get there, then maybe I can stop working now and retire early and all those kind of things. So it's pretty, pretty useful. I'm writing a blog on this. It's going up tomorrow. That's Friday, the 13th of Jan. On the Steps to Investing website, which looks in this in a bit more detail. So please give it a read. But I thought I'd just give you the sort of the framing of it, really, just to give you a bit of an idea. And so I'm going to have a look. A single person, okay, they've got couples in my blog too, but just for a single person, for a minimum standard, what they say that you need is £12,800 per year. Okay? So that, they define all sorts of different things, as I sort of mentioned. So they look at things like transport, clothing, allowances and gifts and house renovations and all sorts of stuff like that. But just to give you a basic idea, that will give you, that £12,800 a year will give you £54 a week for food and a week and a long weekend holiday a year. So that's what they kind of define as their minimum standards. What do you need in order to have that £12,800 a year? Well, don't forget that you've got a full, if you have a full state pension, that will pay you £9,628 a year. So you're already quite a lot of the way there just with the state pension. So that means that you would need to save a private pot of £52,000 in order to pay yourself that, including the state pension, that £12,800. So £52,000 for that minimum standard. A moderate standard of living, which includes £74 a week in food and 2 weeks in Europe and a long weekend a year as a holiday. For that, plus other things, you would need £23,300 a year. So including your state pension, that means that you would need a pot of £354,000 in order to have that moderate standard of living. And then they go one step further and they have a look at what they define as a comfortable standard of living. So that includes £144 a week for food. That also includes sort of like going out for meals and stuff. And 3 weeks in Europe every year as holiday. Now that is a yearly allowance of £37,300 in order to achieve that. So on top of your state pension, you're going to need a pot of £755,000, that's £750,000, in order to pay yourself that £37,300 a year and have that comfortable standard of living. So I think that was it's just quite interesting to have a look at exactly how much money you would actually need to save. And that, you know, £750,000 is no mean feat. So it does require some thought. The earlier the better to really tap into that long runway of growth and really get that powerful impact of compounding. Okay, final little hop through four company headlines before we get on to our interview. Sainsbury's. So it's had a good Christmas. Sales rose 7.1% as it delayed price rises, making it seem pretty good value to its customers, but also as it competed with Aldi using these price match labels on certain foods. It's also benefited from having Argos as well in store. People have shopped there, increased their shopping there to avoid Royal Mail strikes that occurred over the Christmas period. M&S is also doing okay, its core customers appearing more insulated to the cost of living crisis, with premium food and meals going up, and sales of premium food and meals going up 6.3%. It also seems to have turned a corner in fashion, with home and clothing up 8.6%. Tesla does not seem to be doing so well, following news it's continuing reduced production at its factory in Shanghai. Investors are worried about what they're going to hear in the upcoming numbers, the quarterly numbers that are soon to be released. Shares are down, really. Around about a year ago, they were over $350 a share. Now they're languishing at around $123 a share. Finally, Ocado. That's not been doing so well recently either. The cost of living crisis is weighing on item numbers and values in their virtual baskets, and also the uncertain business environment with a forecast recession means that it's managing to ink less deals on its robotic warehouses. Okay, on to our interview with Darius. A very warm welcome to our listeners and also our viewers on YouTube. Today in our big interview, what I wanted to do as we're sort of sitting at the beginning of 2023 is to gaze into the crystal ball a little bit and have a think about what to expect in stock markets in the year ahead. So we've got an expert, the managing director from the very well-respected Chelsea Financial Services. And we're going to have a chat about all sorts of things. We're going to have a look at which markets around the globe are quite attractive, which assets are quite attractive. And then we're going to delve into some investment ideas. And we're going to have a look across the spectrum, really. We're going to have a look at some ideas for investors who may be a bit more cautious about risk. And then we're going to have a look at some that are a bit more adventurous as well. So, speaking to us today, I'd like to introduce Darius McDermott. Darius, welcome.
Morning. How are you?
Very good. Thank you, Darius. Very good. So, well, let's start having a look back at 2022. It wasn't really a fun time for investors. Markets sort of descended in what we would call bear market territory. So that means this sort of prolonged decline. They've dropped more than 20%. What were the problems of 2022?
Well, you're absolutely right. 2022 was no fun to be invested in almost anything. In fact, the first quarter of 2021, something very unusual happened. Every single asset class fell at the same time. And when I say every asset class, I mean everything. That hadn't happened for 30 years, just to put it into context about quite how unusual that sort of equities fell, bonds fell, everything fell. Now, why was that? Well, I think it was quite clear at the time why it was. And I think looking back, it's easy to apportion blame to inflation. And when you get, in 2021, the word was transitory, where people thought inflation might just be here for a short period of time, maybe to do with COVID and supply chain blockages forcing prices up. But what was quite obvious by the end of 2021, even to the central banks, was actually that this inflation wasn't transitory and was much more persistent. And not only was it persistent, but it kept going up, only really potentially peaking, and I'm going to use the word potentially, in really maybe December of last year. So when inflation is high and persistent, the tools that central banks use to quell that inflation is to put interest rates up. So if interest rates go up, broadly, that is a tool to slow the economy, to try and get that inflation back under a much more manageable, into a much more manageable area. It hasn't worked yet, but when inflation, when interest rates go up, and they went up a lot, I mean, it started going up into December 2021 in the UK and in early 2022 in the States. And then it basically went up almost every single month in incremental quarters. What happened in America is they got a bit more panicky, if you like, and actually started raising interest rates, not just by a quarter, but by a half and three quarters. So bigger jumps, and became more obvious that it wasn't going to be short-lived. So when interest rates go up and go up that quickly, firstly, the obvious thing is it's bad for bonds, right? So government bonds, bonds where you lend to companies, corporate bonds, there's a fairly sort of mathematical relationship where rates go up, bond prices go down because those yields go up. So very bad year for bonds. And so it's not always that rates are going to go up. It's the expectation that rates are going to go up. And that's why we've seen a very, very difficult first quarter of 2022. The other thing then with equities, the other sort of major asset class, is equities had a very good run. In 2021, saw global equities up around 20%. And apart from the very volatile period when COVID became clear, was that we were in a new world of working from home, being restricted, and all those sort of things, you know, the stock market reacted very badly, but then bounced very sharply from sort of in 2020. And then 2021, it's just like, oh, COVID never happened. Stock markets kept on going. So the other observation to make is, you know, equities were quite heavily valued. You know, they'd been on a very long-term outperformance and giving good returns. So in 2022, when there looked like there was trouble ahead, equities broadly gave back a chunk of those valuations, particularly in America. Just before we came on, I had a sort of look, a quick look at the S&P over a 1 year. So we're not quite all of 2022, but plus a week. The S&P was down 16% over 1 year. The NASDAQ down nearly 30. Actually, the FTSE, the good old FTSE 100, and maybe we will talk about that later, is actually up 3.5. Whereas UK smaller companies and mid-sized companies were down, well, small cap index over a year was down 13%. If we'd had this conversation in October 2022, they were down near 20%. They've actually had a bit of a rally from that low. So, yes, a bad year, 2022. For me, I mean, look, investing isn't easy. You have to remind yourself of why you're investing, why you're saving for your long-term or short or medium-term savings needs. And 2022 is a reminder that it doesn't always go up. And it was a fairly harsh reminder, but a reminder nevertheless that, you know, markets don't always go up. And we can't expect them to always go up.
So I suppose it was quite exceptional. You know, we'd had a long period, more than a decade, where they'd performed very strongly, but also inflation had been very low, interest rates had been very, very low, and suddenly 2022 came around and inflation suddenly appeared. Lots of people for a long time had sort of said that we were in this sort of post almost high inflationary world, and suddenly central banks really needed to get to grips with it, so did very harsh interest rates, and that just crushed what had been a very, very strong period for lots of investments for a very long time. So we've had this sort of almost exceptional kind of correction in markets. So then looking forward to 2023, is that it? Is the pain done now, or are we going to see a year that's a little bit brighter?
Well, like lots of things in markets and people like ourselves who have to try to make predictions, things can often seem too gloomy when you're in the depths of a bear market. And when things are going well, they can often seem too not too good. The one thing which we didn't touch on in our previous what happened in 2022 is the dirty word of recession. Now, we did talk about rates going up consistently, and there is something called the yield curve, and I will try to make a very brief and fairly simple explanation. When you lend to the US government, probably the most stable institution on the planet, if I lend to them for 10 years, I might expect to get more interest than if I lend to them for 2 years. And that would normally be deemed to be an upward steeping curve over time. So if I lend to you for 2 years, you pay me 3%. If I lend to you for 10 years, you pay me 5%. What actually is happening at the moment is if I lend to you for 2 years, I'm getting paid more then if that's when I say you, I mean the US government, then if I lend to them for 10 years, now that's called an inverted yield curve. It's not normal. Okay. Why should I get paid more to lend to any entity for 2 years than if for 10 years? I want more money for that extra duration risk. So when you get this inverted yield curve, it doesn't happen often. What it has done has happened before every recession since the 1960s and is what people call a leading indicator. So when this happens, and we know in our own country, cost of living crisis, rates are going up, inflation is high, people are less likely to spend. And in fact, in the UK, there was negative GDP in parts of last year. The full definition of a recession is two consecutive quarters of negative GDP. So the signs are on for recession, which isn't particularly nice. Our economy slows, we're less likely to spend, and we feel the pinch. One might argue that most people in the UK certainly felt the pinch in 2022, and I wouldn't argue that was the case. But in recessions, another leading indicator of recession is difficult stock markets, which we've already touched on. Now, the question is has there been enough pain for this very well-telegraphed recession? Maybe this recession never actually happens. It's been so well-telegraphed. Now, normally, recessions come quickly for reasons of financial crisis or exuberance, as in the technology bubble, or unforeseen things like COVID. This one is sort of everyone saying, oh, we're going into recession in 22 and 23. Maybe we don't, who knows? But an inverted yield curve is a great, it's a historical sign of recession. Of course, we've got an energy crisis in Europe, which has had extra difficulty because of the Russia-Ukraine situation. That's not a US phenomenon because they have their own energy sources. So maybe the recession is worse in UK and Europe, which is, again, fairly well predicted now, not just specifically by me, but other economic commentators and forecasters in central banks and big companies like JP Morgan and Credit Suisse. And I'm not sure, I hate to be too negative at the start of the year, that maybe we have felt enough pain. As I said, the FTSE's actually up. Now, the FTSE had underperformed the US stock markets for that decade because it's an old index full of mining companies and banks and oil companies. Some of the things that actually did well in 2022 because of energy and the higher energy prices. So I would try to say the way I look at things is markets for equity and bonds are cheaper and better value than they were a year ago. That's not to say they won't get cheaper again. But if we come back to reminding ourselves, why are we saving? Why are we investing? If I'm investing for something in the middle of 2022, maybe I don't want to take too much risk in the first, 2023. I maybe don't want to take too much risk at the start of 2023. But if I'm saving for 2030, for retirement or beyond, actually these volatilities and pullback in markets are helpful because you get more money into the market at these times and you get better value. But I'm certainly not going to sit here and predict that everything's going to be rosy in the garden in 2023. Because I don't know. And I think enough clouds to maybe suggest it might be another difficult year.
So, of course, yes, it's important for investors to remember that stock markets are forward looking. They're a forward looking reflection of what the business environment is going to be. And they're low at the moment because they're predicting the business environment is going to be quite difficult on account of a supposed recession that's coming around the corner. But it could be worse. So there could be further falls. But the important thing to remember as an investor is you do this for the long term. And actually, when you get periods where markets have fallen, that actually offers you quite an attractive entry point when you're thinking about investing for the long term.
Well, there's behavioral finance comes into this market, of course. Nobody likes looking at their pension statement and go, wow, my investments were down 20% last year. But actually, unless you're crystallizing or selling out of the market, it's almost irrelevant. It's not nice. Nobody likes seeing something that they own go down 10, 20, or whatever percent. But you only make that worse if you actually get your ISA statement and think, oh, I had 50,000 investment. Now I've only got 35,000. You only make that worse if you actually sell it, rather than thinking, no, I was saving for this pot to support my pension or to buy a house or whatever it might be in 3, 5, 10 years' time. It is hard to lose money on paper and then think of it as a positive to your long-term savings goal. But you know, any money that you invest in, say, a global index now would buy you 15-20% more units than you would have bought a year ago. So
Of course,
that's the way one has to think.
Okay, let's have a little think about the world, I suppose. I mean, you know, we've talked about, there's quite a lot of negativity, I suppose, in markets at the moment. Are there any regions around the world or assets that you think are particularly attractive? You know, if you were going to pick an area that maybe our listeners or viewers might have a little look at, are there any that sort of pique your interest?
Well, so let's talk about a couple of different and maybe even slightly niche asset classes. Firstly, something which have just not been good value for a very long time is fixed income or bond investing. So, you know, for a decent portion of the last decade, you know, from about 2015 to really last year, if you lent money to the German government, another stable institution who will pay you back, they were actually going to pay you back less than you gave them. So it was called negative interest rates, and totally and utterly counterintuitive to anybody who has that trying to make money. But people got so scared that they were prepared to not lose money and a negative interest rate. So if I lent to the German government, I'd give them a pound and they promised to give me back 99p in 3 years. Scratch my head at that. So fixed income, broadly, the government bond, which is deemed to be the safest part of bond investing, you lend to the American government, you lend to the British government, lend to European. Those interest rates have now risen with the interest rate environment. So I can now get a better return on investing in bonds. And in some cases, again, although there has been a bit of a rally in the fourth quarter of 2022, I can now get 6% on an investment grade bond with not a long duration. And the duration is the length of that loan. So if I get 6%, that's not unattractive. So I think bonds are finally more attractive as the sort of that base part of the bond is the government bond yield, and that has risen. So if I then lend to a company via an investment grade corporate bond, or I have a fund manager do it for us, which we will come back to, I know it's an area you want to discuss, they can actually get another 2-3% over that government bond to give actually quite a potential handsome return of certainly, you know, north of 5-6% this year. So that's an area where there is now some value to investors. A couple of other areas which did very badly last year are China and UK small cap. Now, these are both much higher risk areas of investment. And one of the things, and you terminology that you may have heard before, but a contrarian investing or investing in assets that everybody else hates. Well, everybody hates China. Everybody hated China last year, and it still got 20% cheaper again. So China is now at a multi-year valuation low. Now, there are some geopolitical issues with China. You know, Xi, President Xi, having given himself a third term, which was undemocratic and all those sorts of things. Not that you naturally think of China as a democrat, but democratic society. But also they've had continued lockdowns as they pursued a zero COVID policy. And that's left a very unhappy population. But even that, they've retrenched from that in December. So everybody hates China, and it's cheap, but it's cheap for a reason. So maybe that's an area that is attractive, but it won't be for everybody, and it only for higher risk investors. The other area I touched on, which had a very bad time last year, was small cap investing. And just the contrarian or the sort of return to normal and forward-looking nature, of small cap might mean that, you know, that is an attractive opportunity, but both of those are more volatile opportunities. And I did give bonds for, you know, the more cautious investor, where you might make a return above that cash rate that we discussed a few moments ago, to give us something, you know, to at least try to attack that inflation figure, so that we don't lose money on real basis after inflation.
Okay, let's get on to some ideas. Now, of course, these are not recommendations. That's important to say as well. They're just some sort of ideas around different approaches for investors with different types of risks. So we're going to start with the cautious investor. What would you say there?
So I'm going to try and stick with some of the themes that I touched on in the previous sort of chat. And I think corporate bonds offer reasonable value here for moderate or cautious investors. A couple of funds that might be of interest are things like Lion Trust Sustainable Managed Income Fund. That's a corporate bond fund. Another seasoned investor who runs corporate bond funds is Royal London. They have a corporate bond fund managed by Jonathan Platt. He's been doing fixed income for, well over 25 years. So he's very experienced and manages to give decent returns with a bit lower volatility. For the more adventurous investor, I mean, one might look at China if you have the stomach to go that far up the risk curve. I would have maybe tipped China this time last year, and I would have definitely been wrong, but one can always be early on investment things because they look cheap. So something like Fidelity China Special SITs, which is a Chinese investment trust run again by a very established team at Fidelity, who have a lot of people actually in China as well as in the UK to assist with their strategy. And not only is China cheap versus its own history, because we're buying an investment trust, you can actually get it at what's known as a discount. Now, I don't know if you want me to just explain what that might be, but the companies that they own in this trust are valued at what's called the net asset value. And that's based on the share prices. So it's a real number. But I can actually buy that asset at between an 8 and a 9% discount to that net asset value today. So not only could I be getting China, which I know to be cheap versus its long-term history, is I'm actually buying a trust where it's at a discount. So I'm getting a double whammy for my extra risk.
Double dose of value there. Yeah, I'm just going to, just for our listeners, you know, investment trusts are a niche in the industry, and they have this unique thing when you buy into them in that the share prices can trade differently to the value of the underlying investment. So when they're not so in favor, people don't really want them, their shares can trade lower than the value of the investments within the portfolio. And conversely, correct. When they're popular, actually, they can also rise to a premium. So it's one of these features. It does make them a bit more complex, but we, and I'm sure you do as well, love investment trusts. We think they're a great retail product.
Yeah, I mean, investment trusts have historically, over long periods of time, outperformed closed-ended or mutual funds or OEICs or whatever. Mm. And often if the manager runs an open-ended strategy and an investment trust, which is a closed-ended strategy, the closed-ended strategy will outperform. But there's a but, that often comes with a bit more risk and a bit more volatility, because as we've already touched on, the shares can trade above or below that net asset value, which is a discount or a premium. Very bad year for investment trusts last year in that falling market. And they can also borrow money, which is called gearing, to enhance those returns, which makes them more volatile. So we love investment trusts, but I do think investors need to be aware that they are a bit riskier and are subject to that premium discount swing. So you can actually, you know, take advantage of these things. When you see assets that trade at big discounts, you're actually getting a nice entry point but a lot of investment trusts moved from net asset value or par or even premiums to big discounts last year in 2022. So again, not always easy for investors to hold, but long term, they're great. They're great. They're great investment vehicles for retail investors as well as professional investors.
So that was China. Did you have another one as well?
Yeah. So the other area I sort of touched on was small cap investing, UK. And they UK small cap funds definitely had a more challenged time. Also, if you were a growth investor, and we did touch on that a little earlier, if you were a growth and a small cap investor, you had a torrid time. You had all the wind blowing in your face. So a fund which had a tougher time, but the managers still are very good. They stick to what they do. It's something like the Marlborough Microcap Fund. So this fund invests in very small companies, you know, from sort of 50 to 100 million upwards. And that strategy is a strategy just had a tough time. Do I think the fund managers are still very good and good at what they do? Absolutely, I do. I think they're very good at what they do. But their strategy was very out of favor. So something like that, you know, when markets sell off, smaller companies tend to underperform because there is a liquidity premium or a liquidity risk that goes with investing in smaller companies.
So this is how easy the shares are to trade when we say liquidity risk.
Yeah, and also the size of the company. So if your Shell, a name we mentioned earlier, if you're a big company, there's lots of your shares available for trading. You could go on and buy £5,000 or £10,000 worth of Shell shares like that, no problem. But if you're buying a smaller company, they are by definition less liquid. There are less shares and less of them on the market. And there are smaller companies. So there is that then liquidity risk that you get with buying small companies. And as I say, over long periods of time, small companies do tend to outperform larger companies. And that's another reason which, you know, not only do I like active funds, but I do tend to have a personal bias to funds that invest in small and mid-sized companies because they do tend to outperform over the long period, but not again in 2022. The climate was very against them. So hence they are cheaper. And we like to buy investments that are lowly valued and hope that they go up over the long term.
Okay, yeah. So I can see why that's a real adventurous pick there. Because of course, yeah, the smaller the company, and that's what we mean by cap, you know, micro cap means very small, then the more risk you are taking. But of course, as you said, because they got hammered so much, it means that they are looking very attractive, especially if you're thinking over the long term. Okay, then we'll can we just round it off then for those who are seeking a bit of income? So I suppose maybe those who are a bit nearer to retirement. Are there any picks that you've got there?
Well, and I framed this pick from the position that maybe we're in a slightly different environment for investing. Interest rates are going to be higher than they were in the previous decade. And an investment strategy which had worked for many, many years but didn't in the last decade was UK income, or, you know, buying stocks that pay dividends. So here I'm going to be, again, maybe a little contrary and pick a UK income fund. A manager I met with late last year, Adrian Gosden, runs the GAM UK Equity Income Fund. He is invested in financials and miners and oil companies, out of favour part of market, but sort of companies that can perform in this slightly higher interest rate environment. And unfortunately, I am old enough to have started my job in the 90s. And in the mid-90s, UK income funds were the mainstream of what people invested in. And for a decent part of the next decade in the noughties, you know, buying stocks that paid a dividend, you don't have to take those dividends, you can compound them and buy more units in your fund, was actually a really popular way of investing. So that fund is yielding nearly 5%. So again, that's a decent return ahead of cash, trying to give us a return towards that inflationary target. So something like a good old UK income fund, which were very out of favour in the last decade. Nobody even wanted UK equities post the Brexit vote. The whole world shunned UK equities. So I think even though it didn't underperform last year, in fact, it outperformed, that maybe that's a good strategy for income seekers, along with maybe some of that fixed income we talked about and some of those bonds, I think are giving a decent income return.
Well, on that note, Darris McDermott, thanks very much.
Thank you, Marcus.
Well, a big thank you to Darris once again for that interview. I think he framed 2023 really well there. There's still choppy waters ahead, clearly, but I think there's also some interesting opportunities for investors who are thinking about the long term as well. Please go to the website and read the latest blog. There's plenty of material in there if you're wanting to learn more about various bits of investing as well. And of course, with the podcast, please subscribe to it if you're liking it and share it with family and friends as well. Until next time, goodbye.